Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We are in a great mood on this Thursday morning here in New York City. Jam-packed show. Got some football. Aaron Rodgers is out to prove why he's the best at what he does. Kawhi Leonard has his eyes set on taking down the Lakers, and they're still looking for suitors for their newly acquired point guard, Chris Paul. Working against the Thunder? Well, Paul is 34. He's on a three-year, $124 million contract, and his game is on the decline. Working for them? Well, he's got a great nickname, and right now he appears to be healthy. A recent report says there's increasing expectations that Chris Paul will start the season with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Nick, how do you think he fits in here? Because it appears and it seems like this is where he's going to be for at least the foreseeable future.
Well, no, it's not a good idea to keep him, but they don't have any choice. Right now, they can't sell a product that no one wants to buy. And people will eventually want to buy the product that is that Chris Paul provides, but you're going to have to wait until the entire league is available to you. 40% of the players under contract in the NBA right now are ineligible to be traded. Two out of five guys can't be traded because they signed this offseason because of how the CBA works. You're going to have to wait until December.
Okay, now tell me something. Did you think the audience either didn't understand the 2 for 5 or they didn't understand the 40%?
I was trying to put it in simpler terms.
My 12th grade English teacher told
this
me,
guy.
Why use two when one would do? So your word club.
Go ahead. I was trying to simplify it. Maybe it didn't need simplification. The point remains that there's not enough teams right now that can get in the game for Chris Paul. But for the Thunder, it is in their incentive to be bad, and it is in their incentive, it is in their interest to play Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at the point as much as possible. Chris Paul hurts both those things, because while he's not worth his contract and while he is on the decline, he will help you win games. They have all these draft picks over the next 7 years. The only good ones are going to be theirs, and that's assuming they're bad. So they need to be bad instantly. And so, no, it's not great, but what are you going to do? You can't. The only way you could get Miami to take him right now is if you included a bunch of picks along with him. They're not in the business right now of giving picks away. They're in the business of bringing picks in. So he's going to have to start the season there. Mm-hmm. They will make it work throughout. I would be shocked if he finished the season there. He's not going to play the whole year there, but through December, and then see if a team like the Knicks says we got to get in the market, or if there's a team that thinks, hey, we're a Chris Paul away.
I think most basketball fans are sitting here shocked like me that 40% of the players aren't available. Now, with the hype on the NBA, we've never covered the NBA in the offseason the way we've done the last couple offseasons. Yep. And this has the most hype, the most coverage. So 40% of the players aren't available. So there's not a whole bunch of trades to be made. And, I mean, the Rockets are so happy that someone took Chris Paul off their hands. So, I mean, how are the Rockets going to get Chris Paul taken off their hands? Then someone else is going to take Chris Paul off OKC's hands. It's going to take some time in doing this. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if he started the season on OKC and eventually gets moved, because right now teams know they're trying to move him. So they're just sitting there and being like, okay, you got all those picks.
Yeah.
Bring some of those picks to me. And they're like, you know something? Maybe we can bring them to training camp. Them talking about Chris Paul and the future in OKC is just talk, all right? It's just talk to be able to get through the offseason, try to get through training camp, and especially try to develop those younger players that are more important than Chris Paul.
And we're also so late in free agency that teams already have done most of their work.
If
this was a lot earlier, this might be a different conversation. So if you look back on this trade now, Houston and OKC, it would appear that Houston got the better of this
trade. Well, this is why I've been so adamant about defending the trade from the Rockets' perspective, even though there's real questions about the fit with Russ and Harden. When you break it down to what would the Rockets have had to include with Chris Paul to get nothing in return? One pick? Well, they traded Chris Paul and two picks and got a top 20 player, a flawed top 20 player, and an efficient top 20 player, a bad three-point shooting top 20 player, but still a top 20 player. And so when you see what Chris Paul's market is, I think it's going to make people reevaluate greatly what were the Rockets' options to upgrade their roster this offseason if the Chris Paul-James Harden relationship was as toxic as reported,
yes,
and you had to move off him. So that's it's not just the player that Russ is. It's the player and the value Chris Paul has league-wide as we sit here in mid-July of 2019.
Now, I've read a lot of things about this trade, watched a lot of videos, podcasts. Man, we're watching podcasts like they're going out of style. But there's two bad contracts in the NBA. It was a bunch of bad contracts, but two worse. John Wall and Chris Paul. When Chris Paul gets traded for Russ, I haven't seen someone arguing that OKC won in this deal. No one. No one's arguing that. Now, Nick, he's got a connection to Houston. He's trying to say that they're a better basketball team and everything. It's clear Houston won. When you get off of Chris Paul's contract and you're able to get Russ at his age and the amount of money you're going to pay him, basically the same thing you're paying Chris Paul, you would much have Russ. But that the conversation, did they win, and compared to, is this a winning formula, those are two different questions.
That's totally fair.
Now, their roster, when they start day number one, yes, they are better. But this is not just about talent. It's about scheme. It's about will people sacrifice. Chris Paul and Harden, there was no sacrifice. And Chris Paul was not the only one wrong in all his demands there in Houston. Part of the problem is the head coach. Because the head coach won't change, and he's not a confrontational guy. But on paper, man, it's clear. This is a one-sided trade. We got to get off Chris Paul, and if we can get Russ, and one of his buddies is Harden, because there's not a lot of people that would match up with Harden well. So we would be having this argument with a lot of other guards, Nick.
Well, and for Chris Paul, to bring it full circle to a degree, I know people are going to say, okay, so wait till December, and then the Lakers can trade for him. No, they can't. I went through all the contracts yesterday. They would have to trade everyone they brought in this summer except for Anthony Davis. Danny Green gone, Boogie gone, Kuzma gone. Like, the Lakers are not a viable contender. There is not a contender that is going to be in the market for Chris Paul, at least out west. Now, these pseudo-fake contenders in the east, maybe. But the reality for Chris Paul, unfortunately, is this year is going to be a year, be it in OKC or wherever he's dealt to, where for the first time since his rookie season in New Orleans, that he is not competing, forget for a championship, mm-hmm, most likely for a playoff spot. And then in a couple years, when he gets bought out, maybe he catches on with a contender in the final years of his career. But this is, he's about to enter, unfortunately, for the first time, the NBA wilderness, and that contract has a lot to do with
it. And who did we see this just recently happen to, the beginning, at least, is Carmelo Anthony. And you saw how that played out for him as he went team to team.
And he's not to that place yet.
The very beginning.
And Chris Paul is, even though he's prickly, he adds more value in the locker room and outside than Melo did. But you're right that Melo was here, and then all of a sudden the contract was an albatross, bought out, and then couldn't catch on.
And it anywhere. Happened pretty quickly.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, does Kawhi Leonard have a personal vendetta against the Lakers? That's next on First Things First. In just 2 days, one of the greatest fighters of our generation puts his legacy on the line as Manny Pacquiao battles undefeated world champion Thurman. It's the can't-miss fight of the summer. It is Saturday at 9 Eastern. It's live on pay-per-view, or you can order it on the Fox Sports app.
Thurman's coming for him.
Time to go viral.
Wasn't that your commercial?
That's my commercial. That is correct.
I listen to you, doofus.
Thank you, C.
Yesterday, LeBron
doofus
fired up some NBA 2K to get a preview of playing with his new teammate Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins. He's got a lot to learn. There are 8 new Lakers currently on the roster.
See?
So this is not real video.
Well, it's real video of them playing a video game. Do you listen to the words? You're saying the words.
But that is a video game. The video we saw was a video game.
Yes, which is the words you spoke, that they were playing a video game.
No, I understand, but I didn't know if it was file video or it's so real.
Okay.
It's so.
Did you see, by the way? Thank you. We've had this debate. Who's the best player in the league? Right. I said that theoretically the guy who wins the title gets the title, and then right. I rescinded that title.
Yeah.
You think I'm being a hypocrite? You saw what NBA 2K did.
No, tell me.
They have it as a tie between my guy and your guy.
Oh, come on, man.
LeBron and Kawhi.
All ties go to the younger guy.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Well, I thought ties went to the veteran.
I just made it up.
Okay. I like that. I like making up rules.
Denny Green taught me that.
Yesterday. Time for stories to start your morning. Tiger Woods is set to tee off at the Open Championship this morning. He hasn't won the event since 2006. See, what are you looking for in round one from Tiger?
Well, the course is playing easy this morning. There's some guys out there shooting 4 or 5 under. The leader, Webb Simpson, right now, 5 under in round number one. Tiger Woods, not traditionally a fast starter. Rory McIlroy, triple bogey the first hole. Tiger Woods better get off to a fast start. He better shoot 3 or 4 under today. If not, there's too many good golfers. There's too much chasing. But I wouldn't be surprised if Tiger's in contention.
Well, so that first hole, particularly our golf expert on the staff, Dave Ermacher, pointed out, only hole in championship golf where there's out of bounds on both sides.
Yes.
You've talked about how nervous Tiger gets at the first hole of every major he plays. Yeah, avoid Rory's quad on the first. He got a snowman on the first hole. And Tiger himself triple bogeyed the opening hole of the U.S. Open last year. Try to make the turn at even par is what I'm hoping for.
Oh, I like that. But the golf expert on the show happens to be me. Until Dave can beat me in golf, all right, don't be referencing him as the golf expert.
Okay.
Me, I do the grass and the golf commentary.
Got it.
Sticking to the brother.
It's Chris Carter, no problem. I heard Dave could beat you, but he's been tanking for his career. That's just what I heard.
Wouldn't put it past him. Moving on to some football, the Falcons signed linebacker Deion Jones to a 4-year, $57 million extension yesterday. Another Atlanta player not named Julio Jones to get paid. See, should Julio's contract be the Falcons' top priority?
No, Julio's fine. Arthur Blank and him have an understanding. That came last year when Julio held out. They're not going to have Matty Ryan go out there without Julio Jones. Outside of Matt Ryan, Arthur Blank personally told me, and their coach, Julio Jones, most important in the important player in the organization. He works hard. They got zero problems with him. He's from the South. The fans love him. He's the best receiver in the game of football. No, that's assurance. They signed the defensive tackle.
Brady Jarrett
2 days ago. They signed Deion Jones yesterday. You can believe the Brinks truck. Arthur Blank ain't running out of money.
Right. So that's what I was going to say is that Julio threatened a bit last year with 3 years left on his deal. He's now got 2 years left on his deal. Everyone else has been taken care of. Mm-hmm. Everyone else has been paid. I would imagine during this season, he gets a contract extension.
Yes.
So not with 2 years left, but with a year and a half left on his deal.
Right. Aaron Rodgers, didn't they rewrite his contract?
Absolutely. 2 years
left? Now, this is different than Ezekiel Elliott, Jenna. He's already proven himself. He's the best at his position and longevity. It's time for him to get a new deal.
And the market's passed him by.
Yes, sir.
Right now, he's wildly underpaid.
Nick.
All right, 37-year-old Jason Witten came out of retirement to rejoin the Cowboys this offseason. And Tony Romo isn't worried about the 11-time Pro Bowler, saying, quote, he'll pick up right where he left off.
That's the problem.
See, where is that? What do you expect from Witten this
season? Oh, Tony Romo. Oh, man, I'm going to tell you, the worst thing about doing TV when you first retire, you got these buddies out there playing, and you know they just as old as you, and you try to fix it. You try to say little things to help them out. Now, is this the Jason Witten with hair or Jason Witten without hair? Because Tony played with both of them.
Yep, right.
But no. I was trying to get Dallas to be a speed team. You add Cobb to the offense, Gabriel to the offense, Amari Cooper, and then they bring Witten
all
back.
Button
this
hook.
Will slow down things again.
Yeah.
So, nice job, Tony.
Listen, Jason Witten should help them in one area. I will give him credit for this. What have I harped on? They were so bad inside the 5-yard
red
line.
Zone, yes.
And, you know, inside the 10, inside the 5. He should help them there. And he can be reliable for Dak if they decide to pass on third and short. He can still get you 3 yards. Cloud of dust. And so I'll give him credit for that.
Woody Hayes,
absolutely.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
But right, I mean,
let's end here with Aaron Rodgers before we throw Witten too far under the bus. The Packers quarterback gets to work with a new head coach this season in Matt LaFleur, but the two appeared to be out of step with each other earlier this offseason when LaFleur said he plans on limiting Aaron Rodgers at the line of scrimmage. Rodgers, though, seemingly unfazed by the audible issue, saying yesterday, "With me, I will do things that other quarterbacks just can't do or just haven't done." See, what was your reaction to what Aaron Rodgers had to say?
Well, I just need a little more on that, Aaron. Does that mean if a coach calls something, you'll do what most quarterbacks won't do? You'll change the play, even though the coach told you not to change the play. To me, that's what I kind of read into it. Aaron Rodgers is a special, special talent. And as you go through the week, the coaching staff tries to do everything they can, especially for the quarterback, to make them comfortable. So you'll go through the week, and you might run a certain number of plays. And if the quarterback doesn't like that play won't make it to Friday, and it definitely won't make it to Sunday. So by Friday, the offense coordinator, the coach, they can sit down with the quarterback and be like, you know something? How do you like these three throws? And the quarterback right then can be like, you know something? I don't like two of them. So if they're into making the quarterback comfortable. But the audible system is the best way to make a quarterback comfortable, because if he sees something on the field, he knows he's got something in his arsenal in the playbook that he can go to compared to running that play against a defense that he doesn't like and then going over to the sideline for the coach to make the adjustment. The best teams are able to adjust in real time, and that's why the audible, it can be a problem. Defenses change too much. They change it on the snap of the ball. They change it 5 seconds before. So right at the snap of the ball, the offense, we might not know what they're doing. So the quarterback's inability to be able to get out of bad plays. Coaches teach the players on offense, you're going to have five bad plays during the course of the game. I might have a free runner in the backfield. Can the blitz pick up? Can the running back get there and chip him? Can the quarterback maybe throw the ball away? Now, if I got five bad plays, I got an audible system, maybe I can count that down to two.
Right.
Because I put in three audibles, and we gash the defense. Because what defenses don't like is for them to do something specific and then us to have an answer immediately. Because defenses, if they're successful, they repeat that defense. So the audible system to Rodgers is important, just as it was to Brett Favre. And to me, I was there the day he took over from Brett Favre. The first day he practiced with all the chaos and everything, and you knew then, not only his arm was special, but he has a special football mind, and I believe they should open up everything to Aaron Rodgers.
So, but this is where, though, it has to be a two-way street to a degree. Because part of what went wrong in Green Bay over the last few years is Rodgers clearly, rightly or wrongly, lost some faith in the head coach. So early on especially, I would argue, even though Aaron Rodgers can diagnose things at the line of scrimmage as well as anybody in the league, and what he is seeing at the line of scrimmage is more informed than what LaFleur is seeing from the sideline or what anyone's seeing from the box because of his experience and just because of his perspective on the play and from being in it, the feel of the game, hearing the sounds,
absolutely,
all of that. But he still, he can't, I believe, he cannot assume that he knows all the answers and that he can't just discount what LaFleur is trying to do, if for no other reason than you need LaFleur as well. We always talk about confidence as a player. What about the confidence as a first-time head coach? What about the confidence of a guy who didn't have great results in Tennessee last year, but people believe he's a great offensive mind?
Yes.
He's come there with the best talent in the league at the quarterback position, of them finding a way to best work together. Like, if Rodgers is instantly, regularly audibling out of things, not because we're in a bad play and I have to fix it, but I can tweak something a little bit, that could undercut some of LaFleur moving forward. So I do feel like Rodgers has to give as well as take on this relationship.
I feel like for 99.9% of the time, that would be logic. But when you have a guy who could very well arguably be one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen, don't you defer to that guy? You have a new head coach. You talk about wanting to make the quarterback comfortable, wanting the quarterback be able to read defenses and make decisions right away for what's best for that offense. Don't you defer to a guy like Aaron Rodgers, or does that come at the expense of taking what, like Nick was talking about, the confidence away from a new head coach?
Well, no matter what, no matter what level you get to, no matter what level of stardom that you might be, that being superstar, that being Pro Bowl player, all-star player, I always believe that the talent has to be submitted to the coach because that's the way that sports are played. There's a reason why Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, the Belmont Stakes, there's a reason why the best horses we have in the world, they still run with a jockey, they still put a saddle on them, they still put a bridle in their mouth because athletes are just like horses. They need a guide. They need a roadmap. And every once in a while, an athlete needs the coach to be able to go to the whip, to be able to get down the home stretch. So those things, talent is important, but instruction, correction, and faith in what he's hearing in his ear is the absolute best plan. So there's a buy-in. Yes, from Aaron Rodgers' standpoint, he's got to buy in. One of the problems I see, though, first couple weeks of the season, because a lot of announcers, when they watch NFL games, anytime the quarterback changes his voice inflection, they swear up and down he's changing the play. And it's not. A lot of those are dummy numbers. A lot of those, there's a reason why they call them dummy numbers.
Right, to trick the, make the defense think you're changing or.
Dennis ahead. Green used to tell us this story. Hey, when I give you dummy numbers, and one guy raised his hand and said, Coach, what are those? He said, they only for the dummies. All right, they not real. All right, so don't listen to them. So watch when they call games. Watch how many times they try to insist. Aaron Rodgers is changing the play at the line of scrimmage. I believe that they'll be in sync. I believe we'll see the best of Aaron Rodgers. When did we see the best of Aaron Rodgers last 5 years? Two-minute situations when they're down.
Yep.
All right, when he was forced and he was doing most of the odd one. So Aaron does have a point as far as his ability, what he sees at the line of scrimmage.
All right, let's get back to some basketball now. Talk some Kawhi Leonard. After winning his second Finals MVP, the Claw had a tough decision. Match up with LeBron and the Lakers to form a super team or go down the hall to the Clippers to form a team of his own. Well, according to friend of the show CJ McCollum, Kawhi's decision wasn't based on who he wanted to play with, but who he wanted to play against.
He went to college in California. It's probably well known that he's probably wanted to play for a California team his entire life. I think from a competitive standpoint, he didn't want to join the Lakers because obviously you're playing alongside LeBron, you're playing alongside AD. I feel like he wanted to compete against them.
See, what would winning a title with the Clippers do for Kawhi's legacy?
Great question. I think CJ makes a good point because last year when Kawhi demanded the trade, people just insisted that he only wanted to go to Lakers. Yes, initially, yes, it was the Lakers, his request, but it wasn't like he wouldn't go to the Clippers. And the more that you could start to see, he started to communicate, and they communicated to me, man, it's about competition, and he wants to go to Los Angeles. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. But Kawhi has a very unique opportunity because I was looking at the players that have played the last 20 years. Man, if Kawhi wins another championship in three different places, and if he's the MVP in three different places, I don't see anyone with a better resume than what he would have than Michael Jordan. All right, Tim Duncan got five championships. Kobe got five. They're five, all with stellar franchises, San Antonio and Los Angeles. Now, I don't know what the rest of his career is going to be. Where is he going to be in scoring? How much is he going to grow his game? But to win three different championships and two of them where he was the guy, I mean, I'm just willing to hear who's got a better resume the last 30, 40 years in basketball than him besides Jordan.
So this is unique's the exact right word because this is such an interesting question. Let's just assume they win it, okay, because that's the premise of the question. Let's assume they win it this year. Then Kawhi will have as good of a winning legacy as anybody we've seen as you're talking about. The legacy and his legacy would be all about winning. He already has the best winning percentage of any player ever. He would be the first player to be, if we're taking this to its furthest logical conclusion, Finals MVP for three different franchises. He would be a role player winning Finals MVP, a mercenary, a hired gun almost, winning Finals MVP in a one-year stop in Toronto, and then a Finals MVP and championship in his hometown-ish with the team he chose to go to. That is as good of a winning legacy as we've seen. And to contrast that with a lack of individual accomplishments that we've never seen on a player of this echelon. Kawhi's only been an All-Star 3 times. Kawhi's never won an MVP. Kawhi's only been All-NBA 3 times. His career averages are 17-6-2. So to have that height of winning with that minimal amount of individual great seasons, right. He's only been a great player 3 years. He's only been a MVP candidate 2 years. And to have as damn near as many titles as you have All-Star seasons, we would have never seen that. So I don't know how you say compared to Jordan, like, I don't know how you rank him. Because what you do over the course, like Kevin Garnett, he's a 15-time All-Star, won a league MVP, won one title. Like, how would you compare that
to him? But he had to leave Minnesota to win.
Absolutely.
So there's no comparison to me. He had to join up with other players to be able to win. There's no comparison.
Well, I feel like a lot of people think that Kawhi's first title in San Antonio, when you said he was a role player.
Yeah, you can't control where you're drafted, though.
Right, but isn't that the same thing with KG?
Well, but you didn't win, though. You can't we're going to delete that part of his career and be like, oh, he was a winner once he went to the Celtics. No, you can't do that. Kawhi was drafted in San Antonio. The overall slow development to where he is, it's not like he's been in the league 10 years.
No, that's...
You said he's only been an All-Star 3 times. Well, how many years has he been in the league?
This is going to be his 9th season, I believe, so 8 seasons.
Right, and he missed one.
1 season missed with injury. No, it's just so... There's nothing to compare it to.
Right.
Like, historically, where right now the guy has 2 Finals MVPs and 2 first-team All-NBAs. Like, that's not usually how this works. And so... Would he jump a guy like Dirk if they do this?
Oh, come on, man. Yes, absolutely. Only thing saving Dirk is longevity, and he played 1 year. Played one championship, and he played all his years there in Dallas.
Maybe you're not assigning the importance to a double-digit All-NBA teams, double-digit All-Star games, league MVP.
If you haven't been playing in the league, how can you get the double digits? You know what's important? Those 3 championships. You said he won. Those 3 championships are more important than anything else. All right? You can be 15 times All-NBA. You win 1 championship or no championships compared to 3 and 2, you are the man. I don't believe there's a comparison between the two.
So let me just ask you real quick. If they win the title, you think in the Pantheon stuff, he goes ahead of a guy even like Kevin Durant, a guy who's got 2 titles, a final?
We need to see where they finish up, Nick. Mm-hmm. What's his overall scoring average? What's his impact the rest of the way? All right? The rest of the book's not written yet.
Right.
So Kevin Durant shouldn't be in this discussion. But as far as guys like Dirk, guys who have played the game, Garnett, and those guys, to me, there won't be any comparison. Because when they're won championships, look how much they're revered. All right? And he went to Toronto. Let's not forget that story. After missing all the season before, almost, but 9 games. Then he goes back home to L.A. with AD and LeBron across the hallway and wins another one? Oh, come on, man. It's going to be hands down.
So you've already got him right now, probably, I would guess, ahead of a guy like Iverson. Because Iverson never won a title. Kawhi's got 2. Got the finals MVPs.
There's no reason to compare them right now. All right? I don't have a list. I work with a guy that makes up lists. Yeah. But there's no need to compare them right now. He needs to be compared to the guys who are playing the game right now. And the guys that are playing the game, the reason why I mentioned Tim Duncan, because he just walked away. Kobe and them, they just walked away from the game, and they got 5 championships. LeBron's got 3. KD's got 2. Steph and them got 3. Okay, Steph's got 3. Now, if he gets 3 in 3 different places, how would you be looking at him?
Well, to me, as I said at the beginning, he would have a legacy of winning unlike anyone we've ever seen. He'd be the first guy to be the best player or win finals MVP, 3 different teams. He's one of only 3 guys to do it.
And question for you, do you discount Steph's 3 to the 2 he had to get with Kevin Durant after losing to LeBron?
Right.
So we got to start telling the whole story.
No, absolutely. But part of Kawhi's story is that when you look at his career, 17-6-2, like that's part of it as well, which makes some of the other stuff, some would say, more impressive, because he's been such a good playoff performer, because he's upped his game in every playoff run he's ever been on.
And Jenna, you'll like this. There was only a little chance he was going to join the Lakers, regardless of what was said and everything, only a little chance. And he does. In the back of his mind, in the front of his mind, he does want to compete against LeBron compared to joining LeBron.
All right, let's break there. Coming up, back to Baker. Will Baker Mayfield snap the Browns' 17-year playoff drought? Nick thinks so. That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First. things first, we're joined by FS1 NBA analyst Christopher Broussard. Hey,
what's up,
Chris.
My man?
What up, man?
Nice to see you.
Great to be here, as always.
Welcome back, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chris, let's talk some Boston Celtics. When the Celtics saw Kyrie Irving and Al Horford walk out the door this offseason, a plan was put into place. Be in the running to land six-time All-Star Anthony Davis. And when that plan fell through, they moved to plan B. Be in the running for Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter. But if you ask Boston's GM, Danny Ainge, the man, they had their eyes set on Kemba and Kanter since day one. Take a listen.
Our plan A was Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter. And we're very fortunate that they chose the Boston Celtics. And very excited about what they bring in many facets of the game, but also as people.
All right, Broussard, look, whether you truly believe that that was Danny Ainge's plan A, plan B, plan J, whatever it was, what do you make of what he had to say up there in the podium?
Look, they don't call him Trader Danny for nothing. He's Trader Danny and does a good lot of good deals because he is a good, can I say BS artist?
Yeah, you right? just did, yeah.
he said what he's supposed to say.
I prefer just a liar.
Yeah, I mean, he's just lying.
which a lot of GMs, let's face do publicly, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
Sean Marks, oh, Kyrie Irving, he got a clean slate.
My guy, Daryl Morey, we're bringing back our whole starting five. We're the only team doing it, Chris Paul's
gone. Sam Presti, we're not tanking next year. We're going to be competitive.
Exactly. So he's not the only one.
No, it's what he was supposed to say. This was probably plan D.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to say plan A was Kyrie and AD.
Yep.
Okay? I'm going to throw in a plan B or B that most people might not have thought about. He probably thought about, let me see if we can keep Kyrie, maybe he can convince KD to come. Okay?
Sure.
And then Kyrie and Al Horford was plan C.
Yes, got it.
Keep Horford, and now Horton.
Well, then, in that case, then plan D is even once Kyrie leaves, keep Al Horford.
Right, right.
Even when we all thought Kyrie was leaving, we thought that Al Horford was going to stay.
Right. So this is whatever. Like you said, it might have been plan J. All right. All that said, though, I think, look, the gap between Al Horford and Enes Kanter is bigger than the gap between Kyrie and Kemba.
I agree.
Like, they're going to, as great as Kyrie is, they're going to miss Al Horford more. His professionalism, his defense, he's a smart player. I mean, that's one reason Philly wanted him, because he used to foil Embiid so much in those playoff series. Kemba's not as good as Kyrie, but I think they're better off with Kemba. I think he's going to buy in more to what Brad Stevens is selling. He doesn't, even though he's a star, he doesn't really have that superstar persona that Kyrie has.
And he doesn't have the demands of an all-star or the demands of a superstar off the court.
And that'll be better with Stevens, because Stevens, I think, has some issues handling superstars and those personalities. So I think Kimball fit in. I think he'll fit in better with the young players. So, look, if they had Horford, I would say they're definitely better. I wonder now, just because they lost Al, but I do like them better with Kemba than Kyrie.
Listen, I think everyone at the table agrees Kyrie's a better player than Kemba, but it's relatively close. And because all the reports trickling out of Boston, and it seems like more are coming, is that Kyrie was even more of a problem within that organization than has been reported. That he was so out on everything, Brad Stevens, young players, Danny Ainge, and he was out before Christmas, is what it seems like, as far as mentally out. It maybe explains, Jenna, the point you kept making all year, which is, how can Kyrie's numbers individually be so good, yet they win so much more without him? That the other guys were relieved when he was not out there, when he was not playing. So I can buy the Kemba at 85% of Kyrie's ability, but 0% of the Kyrie drama is an upgrade. But Enes Kanter is not part of anyone's plan A for anything in the NBA in 2019. Period, point blank. People and Boston fans right now love Enes Kanter. Fans always love Enes Kanter until he starts playing for your team. And then you're like, oh, he cannot play defensively.
That's he played some defense in the playoffs last year. You saw a glimpse of what he could do.
He's a good, very good scorer and rebounder.
And a good rebounder.
Defensively,
he played some of the better, to Jenna's point, He's not a great defender. But in the playoffs, Cantor played some of the better defense that he's played. The problem is they got a monster in Philadelphia. Now, unless they're going to move Philadelphia somehow to the West and they weren't going to ever have to face them, like, to be able to get to the finals, I could understand potentially signing him as a guy in the meantime. All right, he's not going to be a main guy, but in the meantime, until I get my guys, I can have some serviceable pros like Cantor on the roster, because Joel Embiid is going to eat him up. Joel Embiid can get whatever numbers that he wants to get. I'm talking about he can have a full belly, he can have a stomach ache, he can have a back spasm. Like, he can get what he wants against Cantor. So thinking that this was the plan A, I just don't make myself go to the press conference and tell that type of lie. I try to put something else around it compared. Because Cantor, watch Cantor's eyes twitch when he says.
He knows it. He
always, that's the plan
he
A.
He wants to not lie. Yeah. Listen,
Cantor's an honest guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, he really
until he starts talking
shooter.
About my man Nick's hair.
No. And he was funny. It was well done by Enes Kanter there. I got no beef with him in that regard. Listen, he is an extraordinary offensive player. And he only plays 24 minutes a game. So, like, last year, per 36, he would have been a 21-15 guy. So why doesn't he play 36? Because he might be the worst defensive big in basketball. A half dozen games in the playoffs, notwithstanding. But for Boston, listen, Boston, you opted out of trading for Kawhi Leonard because you had a bigger plan in store. You opted out of multiple moves because Anthony Davis was your white whale. Anthony Davis and Kyrie pairing was your ideal pairing. Keeping Tatum if you could. If not, it's fine. We'll keep Horford. Kyrie, Anthony Davis, Al Horford. That is now Kemba Walker, Enes Kanter, Jason Tatum. It's a disaster from what they had hoped for, even if the team can be decent.
It's a disaster because last year you were a conference contender, and this year you're not. I mean, barring major injury, Milwaukee is a level above you. Philadelphia is a level above you. And if Brooklyn gets Kevin Durant back, like we talked yesterday during the season, they're a level up. You have no chance to beat, certainly not Brooklyn and Milwaukee.
But let me throw out this. 2 years ago, you thought Brad Stevens was one of the hottest young coaches in the league. Then he got paired with a guy like Kyrie Irving, who was not buying into a system. We're learning more and more about how anti-Brad Stevens he seemed to be. Yeah, I know you need a superstar in this league, maybe even two. But what if these guys fit the same way this team played so much better when Curry seemingly was out of the lineup? Maybe they fit Brad Stevens' system better.
You need talent. And you need a certain degree of talent.
It's nice to have a dress that fits you, but if it's made with polyester, what difference do it make?
That's real.
All right?
That's real.
It ain't the X's and O's, baby. It's the Willies and the Joes. And around the NBA, you need talent. You got a center in Cantor, can't stop anybody. You got Kemba, who has a ceiling. You guys can talk about all that locker room stuff, all that. They got problems there. Brad Stevens is one of the problems because if you can't
coach. Problem.
Problem.
Can he learn to coach superstars?
Well, he just had a couple stars, all stars. Al Horford, great.
Well,
great
Horford
leader,
wasn't
great
really
teammate.
Yeah, as much of a problem, but.
But why
he
did he sign
not,
back?
He couldn't
with,
handle.
Why
Kyrie?
Didn't he sign back with them?
I think because he wanted bigger money long term.
And the other problem, besides the coach not being able to adapt to stars, they got a problem in Gordon Hayward. All right, you talked about the white whale being. Yeah. You know they're gonna put this.
I left him out.
This dude is not who he used to be. He's not the kid you recruited when you were at Butler when he was a three-star, and his contract will continue to be a problem because Jaylen Brown and them, they're trying to get a new contract now. Tatum, they're trying to get a new contract. How much is Gordon Hayward making?
What, more than max money, $30 million, more than any of those guys.
Okay, that will be a problem with those younger players who still have goals to try to get them a max contract next.
Two quick points, one on Stevens, one on the Celtics. On Stevens, listen, I maybe got a little too enamored with his sideline out of bounds, with his out of timeouts, with doing more with less, because he is as good X's and O's as anybody in basketball, But to your point about the Willies and the Joes,
the game is not about the X's and O's. The pace is too fast.
It's a personality business, and it's a talent management business. Now, to your point about the Celtics, listen, Celtics gonna make the playoffs. Celtics probably gonna exceed their Vegas total for wins. They're gonna overachieve and get bounced in the first or second round. This is the story of this team since the Big Three left. They overachieve. You make a deep run with little Isaiah Thomas. You're a good story. But You keep talking about what you will be without ever actually being it. And that's the reality. So they're going to win 46 games, and they're going to have a tough first-round series with the Pacers.
Right.
And we're going to talk about, well, when Jaylen Brown takes that leap again for the third straight year, we'll be talking about that with this team.
You don't like polyester dresses?
No, come on, Jenna. You ain't had a polyester dress in 25 years.
Okay, but still, if I wore one, wouldn't be the worst thing. Broussard, we'll see you later
Christine,
in the show.
Put her in one tomorrow.
Yeah, nope. Make sure there ain't no fire around you.
Coming up, is Baker Mayfield about to make history in year two? That's next on First Things
First. A little cotton, a little wool for myself, a little silk if she
can mix
it. A
little polyester for me. Here's how you know NFL football is only 49 days away. Chris Caney is here.
Welcome back, man.
Welcome back. Got a little Harden thing happening on
got
your face.
Got a little something going on
yeah.
with the beer game.
It's
yeah.
good. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Also, did you just finish up your football camp?
Yeah, just annual finished up the Camp of
okay.
Champions. I host it every year in Manhattan. It's a free camp.
Oh,
this year
nice.
We had over 600 kids, so it was dope.
Congratulations,
nice.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Chris really Caney, love time. The kids, man.
Love the kids, man. Love the kids and love
good
ball.
Stuff.
So.
All right. Well, we're happy to have you here. We love when you're on. Let's talk some football.
That was good, Jenna. You didn't.
She didn't make it awkward. There you go.
On the outside, I didn't, but on
we'll
the inside, it was awkward.
We'll
I knew it was candy because the lights went out when the
Baker Mayfield's never been one to shy away from the limelight. He loves it. It loves him. From winning the Heisman to being selected first overall by the Browns, and with more hype surrounding his team than ever before, he's once again not shying away from who he is, saying, quote, I'm going to be myself and believe in that, and if you don't like it, that's okay. Caney, what do you expect?
Colin Cowherd. That's what he said at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what he said at the end.
He got
that.
Smoke for everybody.
Little Herb. Something
yeah.
for him.
What are we expecting from Baker Mayfield as he gets ready for year two?
Well, I think we can expect a similar season from Baker Mayfield that we've seen from some of his contemporaries, that being Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. Both of those guys in year two, double-digit wins for their team. Over 60% completion percentage, and of course, a 3-to-1 touchdown interception ratio or better. So I think when you look at the skill positions that the Cleveland Browns have, I mean, Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., Antonio Callaway, Nick Chubb, David Njoku, I mean, I think it's set for him to have that type of campaign. The only thing that would give me a little bit of trepidation from a personnel standpoint is that offensive line. I like their guard center guard trio with Joel Bitonio, J.C. Tretter, and Austin Corbett. The tackles, though, you know, Hubbard and Greg Robinson, they leave a little something to be desired. But you do have some continuity with the offensive system that he's going to be running. They kept Freddie Kitchens in-house. They elevated him from offensive coordinator to the head coach. So I think that that will benefit Baker. Now, that cuts both ways because defensive coordinators got a year of tape of seeing Baker Mayfield in that same system. Mm-hmm. So they'll do some things to try to take some of his strengths away. But by and large, I like what Baker Mayfield brings to the table. I like what he does, not only from a production standpoint, but from an intangible standpoint for that team. We'll have to see how all those strong personalities work together. But I think the stage is set for him to have a big season.
And go ahead, C.
Talking about a big season, I have another question for you because I think that from the Cleveland Browns, people will be talking about the Cleveland Browns, but I believe that the part of the team that will be misrepresented is the defense. And you like what they got up front. You like Olivia yeah. Vernon coming over, pairing him up with Myles Garrett. What potentially can we see in Myles' third year when you add another premier rusher on the outside? And if Baker does these things you're talking about, interceptions, that the offense is going to be highly ranked. What does that do for defensive players? Because I believe he's an up-and-coming star and might get 20 sacks this season.
Well, here's the thing. People always say a tight end is a quarterback's best friend or a running back is a quarterback's best friend to take some pressure off of him. To me, I think a really good defense is a quarterback's best friend because they can create better field positions, steal extra possessions, set your offense up to be able to have success. So what they've done defensively, trading for OV and then signing Sheldon Richardson, I think that's going to be huge. I mean, that's going to take a lot of pressure off of Myles Garrett. I mean, you're talking about two or three guys that can command a double team. And
front
so
you, four, I mean, because you like Ogunjobi as well.
I love Ogunjobi.
Yes.
Love Ogunjobi.
So Garrett, Ogunjobi, Richardson, Olivier Vernon, that's in the discussion for most pressing front four in the entire league.
Absolutely. And so when you don't have to blitz in order to be able to apply pressure, mm-hmm. it gives your defensive coordinator a lot of flexibility. And you know Steve Wilks knows how to be creative with front fours. We saw him do it down there in Carolina. But I love what the Cleveland Browns did on the back end of their defense, being able to add Greedy Williams to what they got in Denzel Ward and Demaryius Randall. You know how front and coverage works together. I mean, that could be a really stingy defense.
Yeah, they got a little track team back
there. Last year,
they
were awful in total yards, but one thing that they did do is take the football away. I look for them to continue to have that trait as a defensive unit.
Mm-hmm. So let's put it all together. We all like their defense. Their running game was good last year, should be better this year with Kareem Hunt coming in fresh after his 8-game suspension. Mm-hmm. They have, I believe, the most talented receiver in the league in Beckham. Jarvis Landry was a typical Jarvis Landry, solid if not spectacular season last year. Their tight end has enormous potential if unrealized. The offensive line, questions about the tackles notwithstanding, allowed three sacks in the final 6 games of last season. And Baker played like a top 8 quarterback the final half of last year. So what should that mean? That should mean the Browns are a playoff team, the favorites in their division. And I'll take it further back than just Goff and Wentz. In year 2, Russell Wilson won the Super Bowl. In year 2, Colin Kaepernick went to the Super Bowl. In year 2, Patrick Mahomes went to the AFC Championship game, won league MVP. Like, in today's NFL, when you have this great quarterback on a cheap contract with a lot of talent, that's when your championship window springs open. To me, that's not overstating or overhyping the Browns. To say 10, 11 wins, win the division, win a playoff game should be their expectations going into this season.
But, CeCe, right now we saw a little bit of what Baker could do. We have a piece of paper with a bunch of names on him, and these are great names, and we just all went through it. How do you make sure a guy like Baker Mayfield, who's a little bit brash, he's a little bit out there, he's very confident in himself, and you always say, like, the game is bigger than who you are, especially when you're first coming up. How does a guy like that lead a piece of paper with all these big names on it to be called a playoff-bound team?
Well, this is the thing with Baker, and speaking with him and Freddie Kitchens last year, they have a tremendous rapport together. And I think Freddie and the rest of that staff there are going to let him know, you got a good defense. You got a good kicking game. You got a home field advantage. So they'll prioritize things that every game Baker doesn't have to save Cleveland. He's not drafted to save Cleveland every single play because of the talent around him. Baker took advantage of the talent around him at Oklahoma. Man, he spread the ball around. Now, the offensive line, it's important that he gets as comfortable in the pocket as he did in year number 1. You bring up a great point about the offensive line. They trade away right guard Kevin Zeitler. Now, does he hurt that overall Pro Football Focus has them ranked 20th as far as offensive line entering? That's the unit that you have to watch for. Baker Mayfield, if you ask me, Chris, if you can have any personality as a quarterback, I want the guy to be a football player. I don't want him to be some special guy, some guy that thinks he's better than the rest of the organization. I want him to come to work just like the rest of us, talk trash, play jokes, and be just like the rest of the team. Because in that locker room, typically, there's 50 guys. The quarterback and the kicker are the two odd personalities in the locker room. So I don't mind Baker Mayfield being the type of brash, young quarterback that's talented. I don't mind that because I know the type of locker room that goes around the NFL. Everyone can't be Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Everyone can't say all the right things, do all the right things. Cal Hurd, I know Colin, that's what he's on. Hey, man, I want my guy. I want my
he
guy.
He wants him to be Russell Wilson. Yeah. Loves Russell Wilson.
Well, how much of Russell is real?
Right. Exactly. Well, in Russell, we might see a slightly different Russell as we've seen this offseason.
Yeah, it is a different Russell.
But he awful spicy.
got a little more bass in his voice.
Oh, his voice changed, too.
A little more bass in his voice. But the one point that you bring up about Baker Mayfield, having those intangibles and being able to establish that chemistry, that rapport with his teammates, that's important because this is an organization that's been devoid of leadership, by and large, the better part of this millennium. I mean, you're talking about having one double-digit win season since 2000, and in that same span, you got 14 double-digit losing seasons. So, I mean, that's a problem, and you need somebody to be able to turn that around. I know people throw the word culture around as a catch-all, but I think it's applicable in this situation just because you do need somebody to become the catalyst, the agent for change in Cleveland, and I feel like Baker Mayfield has already made strides in order to do that. You look at these comments about the Giants fans and how they treated Odell Beckham Jr. on the way out the door. That comment wasn't for Giants fans.
It was
the comment
for Odell.
Wasn't for Browns fans. Right. That was for Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Great point.
And that's Baker Mayfield letting Odell let him know, you're one of my guys. I got your back. And you're going to be treated well here. So I think that's something that could be beneficial for this team coming into this season. Because, again, a lot of strong personalities in that locker room and in the building. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to work. And I think that Baker Mayfield has the right demeanor in order to make it do that.
It is good to have you back. Feels good. Thank Feels you, like Jim. Football's right around the corner. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.